this is Moss Whelan and Story in Mind. And so I found a perch. I'm downtown and just getting ready to talk more about subverting, using the hero's journey or the monomyth of Joseph Campbell and company, playing with it, or exploring it, turning it inside out. It always occurred to me that it wasn't, like, say, it's not written in stone, and any structure that I've been working with, I'm playing with it and I'm using it, and I have my agenda, and as I'm saying that, it's more like our agenda, myself and I, that we are working on this in reference to sort of an internal person versus an external person, and the differences and, you know, ways of operating. Obviously, we're not who we are, like, say, we're, in a sense, we are not who we are. We are, you know, we filter, we put on a show, we have various social contracts and agreements, and you know, obviously we're not bound and gagged, but still, there's that quality of, you know, so interesting to actually be yourself, and et cetera, et cetera. Thus, we have fiction and storytelling. Okay, so the topic is the second part of the hero's journey, the monomyth, which is the refusal of the call. So the first part is the call to adventure, right? So it's announced, it's presented, you know, this is what the adventure is. And then we have the refusal. Interesting too that there are enough accounts that exist of that, where there's these myths, and Joseph Campbell is seeing that enough to sort of put that in there. That there's this, it's like, well, this is a bad idea. I don't think I should do this. Or for whatever reason, like whatever it is that keeps the heroic male, female, non-gendered, and it just, you know, there is some reason for not doing this. Right away, I'm thinking of, say, subverting. The obvious is flipping it around and going, you know, yeah, totally, let's go. And I was watching an interview with Lucille Ball, and she talked about getting into the biz, the movie industry, musicals. I think she said she was starting off with vaudeville, getting into that, but just didn't know how, and that, say, it was difficult to do. And that she was so happy to be involved with in it, thrilled, that she wasn't conscious of anything in the way. That there, you know, as soon as she, and it really sounded like it was from the beginning, that was her passion, and that at least at the beginning, there wasn't a jaded quality to it. And it really did sound like up until that interview that it was, say that she was on point as far as her interest and in doing it. So it was, instead of a refusal of a call, it was like, yes, yes, yes. And it was interesting because they talked about her getting fired from, I think it was Ziegfeld's, and a popular music, is it Musical Review? Singing, dancing, and I think she lasted 5 days, she said. And she hadn't talked about it. She didn't want to talk about it before, but talked about it. And too, it had a mental health component to it. And, you know, that she was so distraught that she was pulling herself back from the brink. How about we say that? And so that, and too, it was good in the sense of, you know, say, seeing somebody who'd gone through that and then who had, you know, found their quote-unquote calling. There we go. Call to adventure. But the interest here is to be subverting and subverting the refusal. And, yeah, the call I talked about, I quite like the notion of getting into the mind, say, you know, that the protagonist is a kind of duplicitous, and too, that it is the person who is doing the invitation and say calling, and that they are duplicitous and they're doing this thing, but there's also this criticism of what they're doing, right? That some people come forward and say, you know what happens, you know, the people that you take on these adventures, it doesn't always turn out well. And actually, if you total it up, it doesn't turn out well. Like, say, something happens, but et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that say we get in a sense we get behind the scenes and we get to see how these adventures come about. I keep thinking about Gandalf from The Hobbit, Lord of the Rings, a J.R.R. Tolkien creation. And so here's this kind of mentor archetype, but there's this sort of shady quality. And too, the deeper you go, also too, now you can just look it up on the internet and it talks about his origins, and he's a being called a Maiar, and he's been around for a long, 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 long time, and he's not what we see. And I like that quality. I like the complexity. Like, say, all of a sudden the character is not this scheming old man, you know, it's basically an immortal and somebody who looks human but is not, simply because of the age component. And two, that say magic is confined to this, or at least say how it just overall, it seems like most, it's not a human thing. That say humans could, as I'm saying this, I'm going, yeah, but what about that guy? You know, and was he human? That statement is not so cut and dry. Or what about humans using, you know, enchanted items, weapons, things like that? But Moss, what does this have to do with writing, psychology? What does this have to do with storytelling? And you're going to invert this stuff. So we have the refusal of the call. Into the most straightforward, you know, is yes, you know, I acquiesce, or yes, I accept it, you know, sign me up. And then it's like, no, wait, you're supposed to refuse first. Refusing sort of means that there's a social kind of wiggle room that there isn't this obligation right away, or there isn't this strong enough obligation, or it's the character of the protagonist themselves that they feel they're not obligated, right? That they're needed elsewhere, and you know, their priorities are elsewhere. But we're talking about someone who's not, right? And someone who is eager, almost, and that would be almost comical, like, say, to be, you know, turning the whole thing inside out, and then we have this wizard showing up, maybe even doing a very, you know, a bad invitation. You know, the pitch fails. It's like, you know, poorly thought out, you know, conceived. It's like, well, this is not going to happen. And then our fledgling hero, you know, saying, you know, awesome, yeah, using a sword, let's go. I'm sort of thinking of the movie version was The Black Cauldron, and then it's ultimately based on I think it's the Mabinogion from Welsh tales, and it was something like, it was the original Mabinogion, it's like a much older storytelling, and then it was layered upon. That's my understanding, that sort of say, you know, eventually sort of say, a kind of evolution of storytelling. But that, say, we have an older version of King Arthur, and then with the Black Cauldron, and two, there were other books in a series, and so, you know, fantasy series. And if I remember correctly, the Black Cauldron, that there was this quality of reanimation or resurrection, that you could say, put a person, a body in there, and then they would come back to life. And that the big bad antagonist is, say, looking, or say, trying to get this cauldron, or has it, if I remember the movie. Anyways, we're talking about a refusal. I remember the protagonist. It's this young guy, and he's got this he's got the bravery that's uninformed. Like, he's, you know, heard the stories, he's read the books, and now he's excited to go off adventuring. And people are warning him, you know, his guardian, you know, and this, here's this kid waving around this stick and daydreaming, right? And oh, wouldn't it be great to be an adventurer? And right away there is that quality of a character who, naivete, there it is, there's the word. Young, uninformed, not experienced, unwise, and is totally ready to sign up and go off and have a really bad experience. And possibly not survive. Probably not survive. I can see how the arc and the threat of that later. And two, the guardian mentor at the beginning is explaining and sort of, in his sense, explaining to us and saying, this is not such a great thing, and, you know, it's not what you think it is, and it's quite dangerous, and we should just lie low and you know, sort of ride this thing out instead of rushing into deadly danger, unknown, etc. So we're subverting. We're looking for different ways of doing this. We're looking at ways of using what you know, what I had a really interesting time thinking of it as the heroine's journey and, you know, say, morphing, changing around relationships. And, you know, it's because it's an open book. You know, it's just one observed structure amongst many. Also, too, going in a particular direction. So, the call. Oh, jeepers! I just saw. Now I'm seeing a second rat, and living in the bushes, and they ran from one bunch of bushes across some steps to another bunch of bushes. And two, in broad daylight, they did not look healthy. yes. And two, they're, you know, feeding off of scraps, crumbs, et cetera, et cetera. And now I can't stop, you know. So, and two, some people have omas, refusal of the call. Yeah, totally, refusal of the call. No, I don't want to get involved. Okay, so the call is the call to adventure. You know, and I've just talked about, in the previous episode, I talked about the adventure that we don't really get a clear sense. Like, say, in the Black Cauldron, the example I gave, we're getting this sense of danger. There's this warning, and, you know, this is a bad thing to get involved with. Is that, in a sense, the call to adventure, that the call to adventure is a kind of warning? You know, can we, you know, interpret sort of, say, bad news also as the call to adventure? And to that I'm sort of going, oh, yes, of course. And that's been my experience. You know, I don't always have a Gandalf, you know, figure turning up, some kind of mentor, an old woman who, you know, says, you know, please join us on this adventure. You know, that usually doesn't happen. Occasionally it does. So, the refusal in subverting, the refusal is this immediate agreement. If we're flipping everything around, we start with the character not getting the message. We start with the character not getting the call. You know, the phone lines are down, if we're totally turning it upside down. And then the totally turning it upside down, I like the notion of, say, the curiosity gets it going, and then they're led in that direction, and that things are moving forward because of the character, right? That it's their impulse. Refusal of the call also has to do with the character. What is that called? There is a criticism that goes around, keeps emerging, where the character, say, protagonist, isn't active, that they're not doing things, that instead things happen to them, they don't do them. And that has been a criticism that pops up occasionally. They say, I find myself criticizing other people's works in a good way. You just point it out and you say, this character is passive, or this character is active. or say combination, or say, you know, in this example, that's what's happening. And it's valid. Also, too, the criticism has to do with an active character is of more interest. To whom, Oz? To who? If you are driven, motivated to write something headed by a passive character, I'm just sort of thinking, okay, well, what would be the purpose of that? And it almost feels like, say, an ensemble, you know, you have your main point of view, and then it speaks surrounded by these characters that are active and are doing things, and that the main character becomes this kind of reporter or passive observer right there, and we don't get a involvement, and that in a weird way that the main character isn't the main character, or that the main character's function in a sense subverts the role of protagonist. Right away it would sort of shake the tree, and people would be going, well, why, you know, whoever, you know, the critic, the review, it would be, you know, say, oh, this is great, except for the main character. That would be the obvious, and that would have to be, unless you wanted to change it around. Almost like, say, that it's about the ensemble, it's about the group, rather than the individual. Which, that is an interesting exploration. So, how would that work? So it, as I'm seeing it, it would be that putting aside, like, say, I almost see the leanings, like, say, constantly work, that one's own self-interest is being subverted in favor of, say, the community or the group, the organization. An example of where that might work is something almost like, say, soldiers, something along those lines, or some example, some kind of institution where a group has to work together as a team. So it could be sports, something along those lines. Being what we are, though, I can easily see a person, you know, not just, like, say that you could have that, if you're collaborating, say that you're presenting it to a group, and that critique would come up as, you know, so you do realize that, you know, this character is not actually doing stuff. So in that case, it would be a balance of, they do stuff, but they do it for the group. They don't do it for themselves. So that's a bit different than, say, passive, completely passive. It would be more passive in the personal sense, more along the lines of self-sacrifice. I would even go so far as saying ego sacrifice. Sacrifice the ego! Like a human sacrifice. The ego's like, you know, no, take the other part, not me. I'm essential. I protect the protagonist. There is this quality to the refusal of that, where I'm just imagining, say, noble efforts, noble endeavors, you know, big, meaningful things, and that, say, socially, culturally, like, it, that it's a bad thing if you refuse those calls. They could be even along the lines of, say, you know, family, that you have this family obligation, and that it would be unusual for you to refuse these things. So also thinking of it as not carte blanche in the sense of an absolute refusal, but more that there's a struggle, an internal conflict. Gosh, I find that more interesting. Say that, you know, you have obligations, and so it's not so easy. And that said, as most storytelling I've received with this event happening, that there's some struggle, some difficulty, that it's, and too, I would have to say, good, right? Good writing, that it has a level of internal struggle, conflict to it. And too, once again, the sort of passive quality of, say, something physically happening, right? Like, say, missing the boat. That's great, but, you know, that's, once again, that's very sort of external. You've signed up to go on the trip, obligation, it's important to do this, and then you miss the boat, right? And how about this? That the internal conflict is sort of a self-sabotage and actually making yourself late. Whoa, right? That says something, and, you know, it says something more, and it's not so cut and dry. That puts the power into the hands of the protagonist, and yada yada yada. It feels like I'm arguing for the refusal of the call, and not really going with the inversion of it. I did talk about a kind of gender. Earlier, previous episode, talking about the call to adventure, mentioning, say, disability, mentioning gender, and it could go very much beyond that, that there is sort of like a selection process, and they say, you know, we're calling these other people, but not you, right? For whatever angle, whatever sort of slight, whatever cultural perception. And two, I'm just thinking of women in war, and it's not something new, and it's also something current. I can remember seeing the news a number of times and they highlighting female soldiers and on the front line. So knowing that and seeing that, and yet all at the same time that cultural bias still being there, and to honestly encountering it on a daily basis, and ultimately looking at the call to adventure, looking at the departure, sabotaging that structurally and going, well, do we need that? Do we need to depart? Why can't the thing come to us? Why do we need to go to it? You know, once again, there's a distinction between the passive and the active. The active character is actively going towards versus the passive character who, you know, that the adventure must go to them. And I'm thinking of examples now where, you know, say, taking a well-known work of fiction and turning it on its head. Why not? You know, and to, like, I'm wanting to say, you know, take Lord of the Rings and, you know, reverse all the genders. And our aim, though, is to do it with changing, say, structure, changing the refusal of the call, looking at options, and but also say asking, well, why is it a refusal? And it almost seems like, say, to be sort of prejudiced against the culture, that the culture, in order for there to be an adventure, that there has to be a refusal. And obviously there has to be myths, storytelling, where that doesn't. And of course, you know, yes, that totally exists. We'll bypass the call to adventure, and it's just we're on the adventure. We'll bypass the refusal, right? The call to adventure, yes, I will go. This is almost saying, though, that we go through this opposition state, this binary, that, you know, before we have the adventure, we have to have the opposite happen. Flipping everything around from the beginning, you know, it starts with no call to adventure, and then the opposite of the refusal, the acceptance of the call. So we have the acceptance. I'm just sort of thinking about where this is going. I'm pretty sure that the next step is supernatural aids and allies. So I'm just checking out. After the refusal of the call, yeah, it says supernatural aid. So a magical helper, supernatural mentor, and that you get talismans or artifacts. And as I'm playing it, it's the opposite. That these are trinkets, and that they have no power, and it's a trick, it's a con, and it's not of help. But getting ahead of myself. The refusal of the call is setting up, you know, the opposite, that there's something happens. It's made clear it's necessary to go do this thing. I do like it. I do like the idea too, where it's just this endless sort of repetition of that, of this refusal, you know, and, hey, you know, look, there's a very good reason now to go. No. I've made my decision. I always stick to my decisions. You know, even if they're proven wrong, you know, I'm a stick in the mud. You know, once I make a decision, informed decision, very logical, I do all the research, and your adventure, whoo, you know, is a very bad investment. And so, you know, you'll have to find someone else. There's an almost a spoof quality to it, or a parody. And the wise heroic character, like, say, what makes the character heroic? Is it heroic to go and do the to go and do this thing, this go on this quest, and yeah, there has to be a good reason. But say, in this inverted, subverted state, it's quite the opposite. It's, you know, it never gets off the ground. There is no, I'm going to say, absolute. There's no part of it where just moved indoor and still downtown. I was just saying that there's no absolute, and that there's a very good reason to not do this, to not go on the adventure, at least in the character, the main character's mind. And so I've stated two extremes now. One where it's yes, you know, going right away, there's no refusal of the call, or the other where there's, you know, there's no acceptance of the call. And both of those are valid. Both of those are options for, you know, the writer, the author, screenwriter, storyteller. And absolutely, I'm sort of attempting to play with other ideas of how to get around the refusal. And I'm also thinking again of that sort of ensemble group, the community, and that as a group decision. Also thinking, oh come on, Moss, this is not actual, but that say it could be phrased so in the sense of say the individual's adventure versus the group. I do like the notion of a kind of, you know, Homeric odyssey adventure, and instead of everybody except the main character, you know, dying, being eaten by monsters and drowning, that instead that the group is actively working to take care of each other. And too, there is a quality there of, okay, well, we're not going to do this super dangerous thing. Your life is important to me, and so I'm not going to put it on the line. And, you know, there's a subversion of a big sacrifice that happens often in these sort of military adventures in order to achieve a goal, sort of a geographical goal. We're going to make these sacrifices, and it's going to cost lives. So inverting that, subverting it, flipping it around. What a strange thing as well, you know, to be living inside of a narrative that has that potential, and that it's not always this, say, open book of options, but there's this very good argument. That said, I can think of scenarios where I would be going, okay, in order to take care of the group, you know, yeah, we do have to make ends meet, if that's the right saying. So let's see. We have our refusal. We have the person, the character who's offering the adventure. We have, say, that ultimately the decision maker, and all of the other characters that surround and are assisting, making it complicated. I keep coming back to characters who are sidekicks, but who in a weird way represent the opposing side and are making arguments for the you know, the antagonist, basically, putting into question. So instead of being, you know, certainty, that here's a secondary character who's promoting doubt and uncertainty, and all in the name too of caution and being careful, to a contrasting character who is arguing, you know, the opposite, and who's saying, live, you know, carpe diem, live for the day, just go for it. And you know, the excitement of that, the thrill, excitement, danger, and you know, possible loss of life there. So we should be in the crisis of this episode now. We've crested the midpoint, halfway mark, and you know, usually this is where you know, relationships fall apart, and we have a personal, or we have a group conflict, and also to the flaring up of the internal, as far as the protagonist goes, that perhaps each of these characters that is being put into doubt as to their role in the adventure. Are they, you know, confidence, motivation, everything is just falling apart. And as I sit here, crisis-wise, refusal of the call, in a sense, the narrative can't get going. The argument for doing the thing, everything gets put on hold. And there's a kind of, sort of say, putting aside, that say its importance goes into the background. I'm just thinking again of the usually how an adventure would be structured. That there would be this, you know, quality of importance. Oh, see how, you know, big and bad and terrible the antagonist is. And you know, this is something that, you know, has to be dealt with. And see, look. And so we'll have the demonstration of, in a sense, difference. In a sense, sort of say, you know, this is just so extremely bad that, you know, it's anathema, it's like opposite. Now I'm looking at paintings. Crisis-wise, it feels as though the mentor character, the person who's inviting, that they are not letting go. And there's a kind of absolute to the character, and sort of say tenaciously continuing to pop up. I'm just imagining their role, as I've stepped outside, that their role is one that's of an irritant, even though the decision has been made. They're constantly there. Again, there's this kind of spoof quality to it. There's something comedic going on, where the sort of, like, you know, Gandalf who maybe has too, has gone on to other heroes and heroines, adventurers, possibly having found some people that are better. And, you know, maybe in passing saying, you know, a slight and saying, you know, wow, you really missed out. And that later on in the act structure, it's sort of like that, you know, finally going, it's like, okay, well, I will deal with it. You know, at what point does it become essential to let go of the ordinary world and instead encounter the extraordinary? I was just thinking that there has to be a quality of boredom as well. You know, usually we're not encountering characters that are, you know, everything is completely great. And, you know, there, instead it's this unsettled, you know, ready for something to happen. They're ripe when we encounter them. But what happens when that character, say, just continues? And, you know, with that quality of, you know, they're ready to pluck, they're ready to go. And yet, you know, because of their decisions, because of their, and too, it's usually put across as indecision. But what if they have a very, you know, good reason for not going? And yet they just continue to, you know, fester or ferment beyond where they're supposed to be going on that quest. Furthering the comedic quality of it, that they get messages from the Gandalf-like mentor, you know, hey, like postcards, hey, we're in such and such a place, you know, and we've just encountered the second act, midpoint, you know, festival of such and such, and now we're approaching the crisis, and you know, oh, you really missed out on the adventure. You know, while this parody of adventuring, like say, is played out at home, and what would that look like? That quality of, you know, here's our homebody. You know, they would never have been, you know, good on an adventure. You know, they really can't do without all of their stuff. Or, you know, say, you know, they have some kind of, you know, medical condition, or, you know, something like, say, within a city, say, they would be fine, but once they get outside of a city, that accessibility in the sense of disability, or you know, the problem with intelligence quotient, IQ, the same. You know, you get outside of the intelligence, you get outside of the environment that you know, and you're a sitting duck. And, you know, the main character sussing this out and going, well, you know, that's not my, you know, that's not my comfort zone, my field of interest. I say, like, I, you know, how about for me? And too, I have gotten out, I've done fishing, I've even done hunting and camping, and, all of that happened locally. You know, you take me out into the Australian outback, forget it. You know, I won't last a day. And, like, say, if you give me all of that same equipment that I had. But then, of course, you know, there's hiccups to that. And as I'm saying this, I'm going, nah, I don't. If you seriously, like, if, you know, if a plane crashed or something like that. And, but again, I'm arguing with myself and, well, yeah, but what if a plane crashed here, you know, and you survived? Could you survive in the wilderness? You know, you'd have to have your whole list, your whole... That was a police car, Vancouver police car. The sort of siren sound was a little bit different, because you can sort of hear it in the background. It's like, you know, playing in between different sounds. So we should be still. So let's see. We're out. We're leaving now the crisis, and we're going into the third act of this episode. And so that was another cop car. So a different siren sound going by. Is that telling that I don't say police car? I guess there's far worse things to say. Okay. And the climax of this situation, the climax of subverting this this part of the hero's journey, the monomyth, that there, you know, there is this potential, and I'm having fun. It's exciting to be thinking about it, especially from a comedic perspective, to be subverting the genre. And too, I quite see a sort of a fantasy version, and also too, what if it was set though, say, what if you took everything, like say for example, The Hobbit, thinking Lord of the Rings, but just say for, you know, for an example, The Hobbit, and that it's set now, and you have someone at home, such as yourself, myself, someone, contemporary, not fantasy, and that this person dressed, I think he was dressed in gray, sort of gray and blue, but this guy drops by, and he's known as an entertainer, right? He does stuff with fireworks and stuff, and but he's sort of like a shady character too, and starts talking to you about this money-making venture, you know, and oh hey, I'm working with these other guys, says Mr. G, and Mr. G is sort of planning this adventure, and venture with a V, and is going to go on and you know, eventually tackle this mountain and a mountain resort that was taken over.